It's Tuesday, February 8th, 2022, and I'm Dave Sobel. Three things to know today. The IRS backs off as two other areas proceed. Just how low is multi-factor authentication adoption? And the geopolitics in security. This is the business of tech. I've been tracking the IRS's move to use facial recognition. So too has Congress. Late last week, three separate letters from U.S. senators on both sides of the aisle asking for answers. One Republican in the House has introduced legislation to ban the IRS from using the technology on taxpayers. And on Monday, the IRS backed off entirely, giving up on that idea and instead focusing on an additional authentication process. And tracking right to repair, seems Congress has noticed that too. Two new proposed laws were introduced addressing it. The Freedom to Repair Act specifically carves out space from 1998's Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The Right to Equitable and Professional Auto Industry Repair, or Repair Act, would ensure independent repair shops and consumers have access to the same tools and data that dealerships have. This is similar to a law passed in Massachusetts. Congress also debates a larger tech bill focused on competitiveness with China. The House and Senate each have competing versions of the bill focused on scientific research, new technologies, and investments in semiconductors, all to compete with China. Why do we care? That last set of bills gets all the headlines, and I think we care more about the others. The IRS changing gears was fast. I had considered this segment for yesterday's show, and if I'd done so, I'd be doing it again. That should tell us something about the public sentiment around facial recognition and the confusion of not having a national privacy law. Use that insight with your client work. Right to repair's momentum is vital, and this remains positive for those in services. Either offering the service or helping technology investment maintain over time, both are wins. Security researchers at Coveware have released research indicating that there could be a decline in the overall number of attacks, but those victims pay a heavier price. Researchers suggest that the increased risk of law enforcement involvement for attackers thus decreases the pool of cybercriminals because some will decide the potential for being arrested and extradited isn't worth the risk. However, a decrease in the number of attacks would be a positive overall, and it could potentially come with an unwelcome side effect, the cost of ransom demands going up, particularly for more minor, high-profile victims. Perhaps looking for lower-risk space, a new sugarware ransom targets individual computers rather than corporate networks. Discovered by the Walmart security team, this ransomware as a service operation launched in November 2021 and appeared to be explicitly targeting consumers or small businesses. Microsoft released data indicating that only 22% of its Azure Active Directory customers used a multi-factor authentication solution to secure their accounts last year. As a reminder, in August 2019, Microsoft also indicated that customers who enabled MFA for their Microsoft accounts ended up blocking 99.9% of all attacks. The company has also announced changes coming to the use of VBA macros intended to help block malware delivery, starting with version 2203 of Office. They will now be blocked by default. And after much delay, the new Cyber Safety Review Board is now operational as part of the Department of Homeland Security. Their first case is the Log4j bug. Patterned after the National Transportation Safety Board, the 15-member group was formed by executive order last year. Why do we care? Continues to baffle me when I see the data around MFA. There's a tool out there that blocks 99.9% of attacks, and yet it's not used. There's a newly emerging risk calculus for the criminal side of the equation. Note that the activity isn't going away, it's shifting. However, for those in SMB, it's not great news as it's going smaller. That line from individual to micro and small business is pretty blurry, so that's a continued danger area. Let's break out the arrests and political moves into this segment. Russia arrested 6 people yesterday who were allegedly part of a hacking group focused on credit cards. Russian media reports that the arrests came at the request of investigators from the Ministry of Internal Affairs of the Russian Federation. Bleeping Computer reported this, and while Russian law enforcement has not specified which groups, 3 carding forums related to credit card theft displayed seizure notices from the Russian government. And discovered within the code for the seizures notices is a hidden message in Russian, which translates to, "Which of you is next?" It's not all good news from Russian moves. Research published last Thursday shows a series of cyber attacks on Ukrainian institutions appear to be a hacking activity associated with the Russian government. The researchers clarify that it's not a direct tie, but more a broad analysis. Microsoft, however, also released details of actors aligned with the Russian FSB targeting the Ukraine government. Since October, it says the hacking group, which it calls Acnium, has targeted or compromised accounts at Ukraine emergency response organizations. Acnium hackers also targeted organizations that would coordinate international and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. Proofpoint released research showing a Palestinian-aligned hacking group has targeted Middle Eastern governments, foreign policy think tanks, and a state-affiliated airline with a new malware implant as part of highly targeted intelligence collection campaigns. Now, why do we care? In the last story segment, I talked about the changing calculus, and here it is again. A mixed story out of Russia, it seems. Some crime won't be permitted, while others used as a political weapon, most certainly. Those two aren't necessarily distinct either, as crime can be part of the political pressures. It's clear that cyber is a space of warfare, and it should be described as such. Are you still using on-prem file servers and VPNs to share files with remote workers? Ignite is a business-class cloud sharing solution that works more like your on-prem server than other solutions. With a security-first approach to file sharing and collaboration, Ignite offers multiple options for sharing files and collecting files from outside sources, and do it all addressing data governance and compliance. Want to learn more? Check out ignite.com/MSPradio, and when you do, tell them Dave sent you. Thanks for listening. Episode's gone a little bit longer. There's been tons to talk about. I'm going to keep doing it. If everyone's cool with that, drop me a note, dave@mspradio.com, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/mspradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.